Welcome to a special edition of Path to Zero, the podcast about clean energy and the journey toward a low-carbon future. We've traveled to New York City to take part in Climate Week conversations. Now, here's your host, Tucker Perkins.
Our guest in this episode of Path to Zero is playing a key role in Climate Week activities here in New York. You know her from Good Morning America as the chief meteorologist and the managing editor of the climate unit at ABC News. It's great to welcome Ginger Z to Path to Zero. Thanks for being here, Ginger, and welcome to Path to Zero.
I'm happy to be here.
We're glad to have you. I know you're a big part of Climate Week, and I know you're stopping by here on your way to give a big talk tonight. Tell us who you're talking to and maybe what you're going to talk about.
So this talk is really interesting because it's not just me talking. So anybody can stand up and say what they've done and promote what they're doing. And what I love about what we're doing tonight is we're taking an activist, a young activist, who is usually the person standing outside of big media saying, you're not doing enough. And they will be the ones interviewing us. And so myself and Mark Hertzgard from Covering Climate Now, which is a great group that has made all of these journalists committed and responsible for covering climate to a certain degree or greater, and then having someone who's going to elevate it and take us to the next place. So it's going to be hopefully a little bit, I hope I get a little sweaty, you know?
That'd be awesome. Nice, nice to be pushed every now and then.
Yes,
right?
Yeah, because I think maybe because I'm a meteorologist, I like to take people's crap. It's like what I do really well. So I look forward to it. And I think that they should be pushing. I agree with them. I think that it's important to push people who have the ability to tell the stories that need to be told broadly.
Do you find, I know you've been a meteorologist for some time, you find people's attitudes are changing now around climate change? I mean, I know there was a long period of time where at least I felt like denying was okay. Mm-hmm. But do you find that people's attitudes are changing now towards climate?
No question. I started being a meteorologist on television in the year 2000. So I've been kind of in and around people asking that question, do you believe in climate, for 22 years. And I've seen a huge increase in the ability for people to know what they're saying and to understand that it's not a belief, rather science being reported as we know it. Where I think we need a lot of work is that it's not about believing or not believing. It's just saying, here's what we know, here's what we don't know. Now let's go forward with what we know and do the things that need to be done to achieve not throwing ourselves into complete spiral. And I think that's the part that's maybe a little difficult. And it does have a lot of parallels to meteorology, because our science of meteorology, even in the last 22 years, has come a long way. But societally, it always takes people a long time to catch up. I still have people saying the old funny thing of, you must be great having a job where you can be wrong half the time. It's like, it's not funny anymore, it's wrong. It wasn't even funny then, and it's just dead wrong. If we're so bad, why are you looking at your phone every 10 minutes to see what the temperature's going to be? Why the science has really grown. Same thing with climate science. Right. So denialism is just either a hangover of people who haven't educated themselves or heard anything, or it's just them trying to be stinky.
And in your time at ABC, you've really kind of pushed to go beyond just reporting the weather and then really start leading the reporting on climate. How has that been going, I guess, for you?
So like the why of why I do what I do has evolved so much. I went to school to study and chase storms. I didn't go to school to be in broadcasting. And so that part of it came as a big change in my why. Once I started broadcasting and I did my first big storm, which was Hurricane Katrina, a great big storm to be in, my why went from super nerdy weather, interested in how big a storm surge at 22 feet looks like, to, oh my gosh, this isn't about how the storm surge looks, this is about people. And that went and kind of brought my passion for the science into the compassion or humanity. And then in Hurricane Michael, and a lot happened between those two, but in 2018, I was there in the eye wall of a Cat 5. The forecast was so dead on that I could be exactly where I wanted to be, watching what I had forecasted, told stories about for years and years. And I am watching homes twist off their foundation, bob down the street, and rip apart. And all I could think was, I'm watching the people die. The stories of all the people who have told me their stories and surge is happening in my head. I'm watching the 3D graphic that I made happen in real life. And as we walked out of that storm, it was the first time where I ran into lots of people, a dozen or more, that said, not, they didn't say, oh, I always ask, well, why did you stay? You know, in storms past, it was like, oh, well, we got looted in the last one and it didn't happen. Mm-hmm. This time it was, I don't have a car. I don't speak English. The privilege that most of us live in, that we would think that people have choice, became a new part of my why. And I go back to why this means, why I have to do more with climate change, because there are so many stories beyond just the storm. And as we see the increase in intensity and, you know, we don't make change until the stop sign, you know, or for a stop sign until we get an accident, our accidents are happening more often. Mm-hmm. So that's where I thought my why in the last decade have become more and more, well, let's look at the bigger picture, not just this one thing. But when we can attribute it to climate change, holy cow, we need to tell that part of the story.
It is interesting. I feel like, I don't know, I felt 5 or 6 years ago, maybe people didn't really necessarily equate the two. But now it seems like everybody equates the two. And clearly we're seem to be moving towards a period where we're going to continue with more and more.
Yeah.
Where do you find the right parts of the improvements we're making to the climate? And maybe not just in the U.S., but maybe around the world. Where do you see a couple bright spots?
Oh, there are so many bright spots. I look at how we innovate in everything, but I think exciting stories that I've told in energy. I was just at Princeton University a couple of months ago where they're working on solid state battery for lithium, which would take, you know, right now under a Tesla or any electric vehicle, you have this giant battery that's the chassis of the car that can't be changed out somewhere.
It can't be the long-term solution.
It won't be, and that's the exciting part is, but it's good for now. It is, and it works really well, and we're getting there. The cool part is there's so much money and so much brain power going into this solid-state lithium. She believes that within the next 5 to 10 tops years, we will be able to have a battery that you hold in your hands. Can you imagine if you could bring an extra one in your trunk, flip one out, put another one in, get one at a battery station. Right. You know, this is going to change. And I think those types of innovations, realizing what our phones looked like 25 years ago and what they look like today, I have great hope. We're going to figure this out. And you know what? People are going to make money. And when that starts to be behind it, you know it's going to happen.
Right. Massive money flow. In fact, that's the center of fusion study as well for nuclear, I guess. I love that Princeton community because at least the one place that I see where they combined technology with politics with science and then human factors, and rarely do I see that, you know, because again, as we kind of see with power lines, right?
Yeah,
we can develop power plants, but we can't connect them to where the people are. Useless.
Right.
And at Princeton, they seem to take such a holistic view of
and business
sorts.
They take it and make it into a business. This was a lab gone turned immediately into a business within a couple of years. And that gives those students, it's funny because they have the different parts. They have the scientists who figured it out. They've got the business guys that came in to make it actually go. And now they're going to take it to scale. Right. And they have a new facility in Dallas, part of new energy, not just the solid state battery, but is how they're recycling it. So in my new special coming up, you'll also see how their science at Princeton is changing the way that we can recycle the existing batteries and the batteries to come. It makes it half the cost, way more energy efficient by like 70%, and it's 80% better with water. So
batteries are a place you see a future and great change. Anything else?
Oh, I think renewables. I think I get excited about the future. And when you say renewable, I think everyone just stops at wind and solar, and they're like, and they have issue with many of them. I think there's so many things. I was lucky enough to grow up in a home with geothermal energy. Right. And just looking at how we can harness the power of hydro. You know, there are a couple of really exciting ventures happening, and one's coming to the port of LA in, I think it's late November now. It's already been tested in Israel and Portugal. And it is kind of just like a bucket that picks up water and drops it, and that works on a hydraulic, and that creates, it has no impact to marine life. It doesn't make a ton of noise. It splashes with the waves, but it really is just using what we have and using the power of Earth and providing huge amounts of energy, even in places that don't have a dam. You know, you don't have to create. And that's the thing, is we've done a lot of engineered reality, and that's what we live in now, which is wonderful, and it worked for a lot of the ways and the economy and things, but like, these are the ones that are not touching what we already have and thinking of it now before we mess it up just for our own pleasure. Yeah,
and some of the things like wave action.
Yes, it's a wave. It's called eco wave.
There's so many cool things there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything else? I'm just kind of loving. I'm a technologist, so when you talk about these technologies,
I think that's, well, and then I get inspired about people. I think their connection to the planet and to the things that they, you know, I don't think everyone will ever be all fully on board. I think the plastic pollution thing scares me more than most stuff, because I think ease, greed, and who's funding and fueling plastics freaks me out. That isn't as much a climate thing, but I think I'd rather have I'd rather take some care of the microplastics that are in my water right now, right? Like, those types of things actually leave me a little...
Just the sheer volume.
Yes. And that it is, and we are the number one plastic producer, and people always want to place blame on the rest of the world. And I think just... It excites me that hopefully people are ready to listen, you know, because I always wonder, I'm like, who are these people that want plastic everywhere? Because can't be. We got to figure this out, right?
That's really more about a health
Seems
thing,
like a non-controversial thing that you wouldn't want that. But I think that there's... Unfortunately, that's the one I get more excited when I see technology, money, you know, but pouring to pull back from what we've already done, I think that's harder.
Yeah. If you look at, I mean, even what's pouring in now to carbon capture.
Yeah.
Pouring into fusion, what's pouring in batteries are just the big thing. Because we do need to do something there.
Yeah.
So maybe beyond plastics, anything else really frustrate you?
I think just the tropes, like those things that people have heard 10, 15, 20 years ago, it's very equivalent to the meteorology thing where they're saying the same thing or they're still calling me a weather girl. Just learn. That's not it. You know, like we have to evolve. And I think being ready and open to doing that, I don't know everything. I'm learning things every single day. I'm just here to learn along with you. Like people, for some reason, this is where people no longer say, do you believe? They say, you're part of the communist, you know, mission to, they have these preconceived ideas about who I am and what I do, and just because I'm reporting on battery technology. It's the strangest thing. Yeah. And that frustrates me. And I guess that goes to the cliche division of America and division of the world, but that's going to hurt in everything, but especially in climate change.
Yeah, true. Yeah, it's, I guess it just fits the narrative you want to believe sometimes, and that's what
that's what they're always saying. And I'm like, no, I'm just talking to the people who are doing the work. And while I do think that the battery stuff is exciting, if there's something wrong with it, you know, if there's, like, in my battery special, we are attacking the reality that to mine America to the point that we need to is not going to happen, even if we went all out in the next decade. It just can't. This new cobalt mine that we went and visited in Idaho, the first cobalt mine in America in more than 30 years, because we haven't done it and we used to do it really poorly, it's only going to be able to create 10% of the need that we require in America now.
In the U.S., right?
Now. And that's going to exponentially grow with the battery power and renewables that we intend or supposedly are going to have. So how are we really going to do this domestically? How can we have our oil of now, meaning those minerals? And so we're going to take a really hard look at that and be honest about that. I'm not sugarcoating it for fun, right?
Like, I think it goes back to that battery technology you're seeing at Princeton, is that you begin to see them either emphasizing not using some of that or clearly using less and less.
Or clearly using less and also realizing the value and then finding great ways to 100% recycle it.
So what you saw at least gave you hope that we can mine cobalt in the U.S. and do it in a way that you as a neighbor would use and labor laws would, because that's good. I don't always agree with that.
Well, and that's because cobalt specifically has had, you know, 60% of it is mined from the DRC, and it has had horrible, you know, children working in terrible conditions. It's caused huge health concerns over there. First of all, we shouldn't be getting it from other places when we have it in our country. Anyway, I think everybody can, and this is actually where I think politically this could bring us all together, because if you're building an economy here and you can do it in an environmentally friendly way, who's to say we shouldn't do that?
Right.
Now, do we need to limit the number, you know, do you need a brand new cell phone every other year? Do we need a new laptop? Those are the things that we're going to have to also as a society look at, because we got to slow the roll on how much we need.
Nobody ever talks about that, do they?
No, they don't. And that's the part. But also, do we all want to go back to no cell phone? Then that's the only way that we don't mine, you know, or don't find ways to 100% recycle we have.
We'll never go back.
We're never going to go
GDP
back.
GDP and lifestyle.
And so in this special, we're going to attack the next frontier of mining, the deep sea mining, which is one of the most controversial places out there now in the energy field. Yeah. And I'm going at this in the most, you know, wide-eyed, let me learn everything I can, because nobody really knows, and both sides are saying nobody knows, but then they say, but we're right. And I have found that as a journalist reporting on this, I came away with, I don't know what's going to happen, except I think money will win, as it always has. Right. But in this special, that's kind of how I start it. I say, listen, we've always done this. We've gone full force. We're like, oh my gosh, look, we don't have to kill whales anymore. There's something called coal. And then we went all in without even thinking or knowing. We probably couldn't have known scientifically for a while what was going to be the implication of that. Everything we do, because we are taking something from the planet to burn or to whatever, is going to have impact. How do we do it knowingly, doing the least but gaining the most when it comes to, you know, electrifying America, say?
Yeah, there's Bob Ballard. Do you know who Bob Ballard is? Mm-hmm. Great undersea researcher. Talked to me 6 years ago now about undersea mining and minerals. Really, even at that time, was when America, to a degree, and our interests were jockeying with China and their interest for a lot of spots that no one ever talked about. But even then, he was talking about the value that we would see in undersea mining.
Yeah, and I think that's, when I first heard about it and I started studying it, there's just these little tangerine-sized, kind of lumpy rock-looking things, and inside of them, everything you need for a cathode for an electric vehicle, for battery. And so you've got nickel, manganese, copper, and cobalt. All of those things. Right, and there are millions of them sitting 200 miles west of Mexico. And there's one company, the Metals Company, who's kind of taken the lead on this. And they've done their own, you know, experiments, and they're testing environmental conditions. A lot of other people are saying, we have no idea what's down there. There are so many microorganisms. If you throw one thing off, you could throw this whole thing off. The International Seabed Authority, who are the people who are going to give them the permits eventually, they're kind of in the middle of it right now, and they're going to be driven by money for sure. But again, can we even get domestically to the point that we need to reduce emissions here if we don't do that? I don't know. So those are the numbers we run in the special.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sustainable ocean farming will be kind of interesting.
Right.
I've been following that very closely.
Yeah, yeah, it's fascinating.
So we'll start to wrap up, but so tell our viewers and listeners once more, you're working on a special. When can they expect it? Maybe what, tease them a little bit.
Yes,
about that.
Tuesday night, 8:30 p.m. So after September 20th, you can see it anytime on Hulu and on ABC News Live. And so we'll have it, links posted everywhere, but it's a streaming special, and it goes through everything we've just spoken about and so much more.
Awesome.
If you want something on mining and deep sea mining, this is the half hour for you.
Well, you've already spoken about a couple of things that very few people talk about, but you know, one there, because really this is the first time, is just conservation.
Yeah.
You know, maybe don't get a cell phone every other 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing that now. You're seeing certainly Germany and England doing something with conservation that we really hadn't seen before.
Yeah, it's really
even seen in California with some of those last heat spells.
And that's where policy does make a difference, right? And that's where policy always does, but I'm saying can really make an impact. When the UK said we're going to not have any cell phone company change the adapter, that right there saved I don't know how many tons of copper that needs to be mined, but a lot. Because my cord has worked for as long as I've had my phone. If you give me a new phone and now it's got a new jack, you just changed the whole thing and I need a new. Those all add up because every single one of us has 10 of them in a drawer. And then on top of that, and what we'll talk about a little bit in this special is, imagine if we mined our drawers. How many do you have at home?
Right.
Old cell phones, laptops, you know, we got a lot.
Yeah.
And so if we actually took that, and how much more would that create in the circular economy? And how we just have to make it easy for people or incentivize it, but that comes from policy.
Yeah. Mm. If do it done right, it's a massive improvement.
Mm-hmm.
And not only less disposal, but getting those good materials.
Yeah.
All right, so let's finish it up a little bit. We have to have a little bit of fun, so let's have a little fun here. We use just a bit of magic. Give you a magic wand. You get to use it to make one wish for one thing in 1 year that would have the greatest impact as you see it in this conversation around climate sustainability. How would you use your wand?
It's funny. I always ask people that question. So,
thought that was our question.
No, I definitely ask people that one a lot. But I like it because it's impossible to choose one. There are so many places like water. I mean, I grew up in Grand Rapids and just north where we have a PFAS situation. I think I'd attack water. But then I thought, no, let's go bigger than that and go to conservation, because I think I would start by doing the challenge that I found very simple with clothing. But now I've taken on a new challenge, and I'll start, I believe it starts in October. I'd love for everyone for a year to say, don't buy anything new that you don't absolutely need. Like a toothbrush, sure, if your toothbrush, you know, like there are those necessities. But if we can do the no new things challenge and have everyone just take stock of what they do and what, and then I'll have the people who will say to me, oh, really nice from your place of privilege to tell me not to buy anything. It's not about that. It's about rechecking whether you shop, it doesn't matter where you shop or what you do. A lot of us, at least in America, where we live in a place, many of us of privilege, could take a moment and look at what we consume.
Needless consumption.
Needless consumption.
Just because you want to and not because you need to.
And it happens so much more than I think people are aware of. We have been conditioned. Mm-hmm. And this is not a popular opinion. This one gets me in trouble more than anything. There are a couple things that piss people off. It's when I talk about electric vehicles, just kind of broadly, that upsets people. When I tell them and I don't like green grass because I think it's pointless in a lot of places and it takes too much water.
Right.
If you ever try to tell someone where they should live or not live based on, you know, natural cycles of the planet, wildfire, that usually gets them. But tell them not to buy things. Woo! When I did the Port of LA story, talking about all those ships sitting there and the emissions and the air quality, I was like the Grinch. That's not my intention, but I do think that it's worth being aware.
It's amazing mm-hmm. how you can set people off.
Oh, it's
but
exciting,
yet everything
isn't it?
You just said is spot on.
Yeah.
And probably necessary.
I mean, yeah.
Having some conscious thought about how we are living our life on this planet. And I have to say, I've been in this intensely for maybe 5 years. I can count on one hand the number of people that want to talk about conservation or even sustainable living. Mm-hmm. Water, mm-hmm. food, energy, mm-hmm. that's just not there.
Maybe because I grew up with my dad. He's from the Netherlands, and he is painfully frugal.
Right.
And so we grew up to the point where showers were kept short because of water. We pay for it, but right. also because the earth only has so much clean water. He's a geologist, so he just knew a lot about that. Energy was critical to keep low. We always were on the edge of pretty uncomfortable temperature-wise on both sides of the summer and winter.
I grew up in that house, too.
Yes, but I think there's something to that, to understanding the lack of need to go excess. And eating every bite and the food waste and the, if we looked at our own, and I shouldn't say that, it is not about us. We also have to then vote and push for other people. So my wand has two parts. My wand has the personal understanding and then the people, I think we got to push everybody and say, I mean, vote with our dollar, yes. Like if my lotion that I like for my face isn't going to change to post-consumer waste or recycled lotion, I'm not using them anymore. But I'm like super informed. I think we have to go bigger and vote for the people and the things that we know and believe in are going to be great for ourselves, our health, and then our planet.
And well said. All right, last thing. Mm. In honor of the time you spend with us, and we like to plant a tree in a national forest. Mm. In your name and in your honor.
That's
now,
so nice.
You're a Michigander.
Yes.
So I'm guessing you are going to pick Michigan, but I'll let you pick a forest for us.
Manistee National Forest.
Absolutely.
That one is where I camped growing up. My husband's sitting here, and he hates camping so much. And it's beautiful. And there are all these trees that you sleep in.
done just right.
Yes. It's a really gorgeous, right on the Lake Michigan. It's so pretty. So that'd
awesome.
Be great.
We will be glad to do that.
Thank
it's
you.
Easily done. Anything else you want to tell our listeners before we leave?
No, I'd say just if, you know, everyone's doing important reporting and we're trying to do more. And I think that if you get engaged, I love hearing from people what they'd like to know more about. That drives a lot of my reporting. When I started It's Not Too Late, this weekly segment I do 3 years ago almost, I did the first one, and then ever since then, people's comments, I'll go off of them and say, that's a great idea, because that's what people want to know. That's the, you know, the social media has great intention with that, with the engagement of seeing and getting the pulse of what people really don't understand or need to know more about. So I say, reach out, and be engaged.
Just such a complex subject in general. Yes. For you to be able to talk about it in simple terms that people can understand, it's always lovely.
Thank you.
So thanks. Yeah. So love what you're doing. Ginger Z, Chief Meteorologist, head of the climate group for ABC, headlining Climate Week here in New York this week. So thank you so much for being with us on Path to Zero.
Wish me luck.
Thank you for listening to a special edition of Path to Zero with Tucker Perkins from Climate Week in New York City. If you like what you've heard, subscribe and rate us on your favorite podcast app. You can email us with questions or comments to path2zero@propane.com.